Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Monday, November 8th, 2010, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick.
Nice to meet you. No, it's not.
I'm so excited because the very talented and oh so charming Katie Grace returns today for part two of her appearance here on the Erotic Mind podcast series. I had such a good time with her last week, I could hardly wait for this week to finally roll around.
Buddy, what are you wearing?
Who wants to know?
How many pairs of underwear do you have on?
Now that's really getting personal. But wait, you didn't miss part one of our conversation that appeared here last week at this time, did you? Well, don't worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the search function in the header, type in podcast number 242, and presto! But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search.
I'm just gonna say it. He needs to be checked by a specialist.
Maybe I do. So, Katie also shares another selection from the fruit of her erotic mind. Like last week, she reads from her new novel. And for all that is K.D. Grace, be sure to visit her on her website, kdgrace.blogspot.com. Today's program is once again brought to you by Dr. Dick's How To Video Library.
Oh, come on!
No, it's really a great sponsor. You know, even though I get tons of email from folks looking for my advice, I can only respond to a limited number of inquiries at any given time. But that doesn't mean that I don't care about everyone who writes in. I do. That's why I've set up the How To Video Library. You'll find a link to this great resource right on the front page of drdickssexadvice.com. Look for the Dr. Dick's How To Video Library banner in the sidebar. The video library is the go-to place for all of you who have sexual performance questions. You'll be able to watch all kinds of deliciously entertaining, delightfully enriching, and oh-so-informative videos right from the comfort of your own home. How sweet is that?
Seriously, not to be the evil stepdad, but if you put on a puffy white shirt and declare your love for a 16-year-old, you're going to be swinging from the flagpole in your puffy white underpants.
There's no arguing with that logic. I'd also like to remind you of the toll-free lickety-split sex advice podcast voicemail hotline at 866-422-5680. Listen, if you've got a question or a comment, or you want to rant or rave for a bit, or maybe you just want to talk dirty for a minute or two, why not give me a call and get it off your chest? You can reach me at 866-422-5680. No need to be shy, my friends, because this is voicemail. No human is going to answer your call, least of all me. And besides, calling the hotline will almost guarantee you a place in one of my Q&A podcasts. Okay, on with the show. Katie Grace, thanks for joining us again. I was so charmed by our conversation last week, and we broke open some topics that I've been wanting to talk about for a very long time with many people. I don't often get the opportunity because a lot of folks are, I guess, not really talking about the connection between spirituality and sexuality, and I thank you so much for engaging me on that.
Oh, and it's my pleasure.
Good, good, good. And I want to pick up precisely where we left off last week, and we were talking about the genre of erotica and how it may be a part of a much bigger genre called sex writing. And then we talked about how sex writing really needs to be integrated into all of writing or all of literature, or either the literature or the writing is going to suffer. So I want to talk to you a little bit about the differences, if any, between the genres erotica and romance. At one time, and not too long ago, there was a very clear and identifiable line between the two, but I sense that that line between the two has blurred considerably in the last couple of years. Would you agree with that? And if so, what accounts for this, do you suppose?
I think it most definitely has, and I think it's become much more of a mainstream topic. I think part of that is because more and more people are thinking, duh, yeah, sex is a part of romance. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, the early romances were all when it got hot, the bedroom door closed, and that was the end of that
fade
scene.
Fade to black, exactly.
You know, fade to black, exactly. And I think, to me personally, that's a bit like having a crime novel and fading to black before we actually see whodunit.
Right.
Because the whole point of the relationship is the coming together. Now, I'm not going to say, hey, sex is everything, it's all about sex, but sex is a very big chunk of it. Mm-hmm. And that coming together on that level is basically what everybody who's in relationship, not everybody, but in the romantic relationship, that's a part of what's being striven for. Striven. Oh, I love that word.
And besides the fact, I mean, the reason that it faded to black was so that people wouldn't blush. I mean, you know, in years gone by or ages gone by, I mean, the fact is that, you know, you could write up until a point and then you couldn't write much more. But nowadays, thanks to the efforts of people like yourself, you know, there is more of an integration. And, you know, I'm happy to... and pleased to see that. I mean, I really am. I think we're all the richer for the experience.
Oh, definitely. And I think it's a good thing to make people blush.
Yeah, I do.
I think it's, you know, because I think it brings them down to earth a little more, too, and that's right. A good place to be.
Right. Speaking of blushing, would you mind reading for us again? Because I'm ready.
All right. I'll try to find something very blush-worthy. That's not
Yay.
Too hard to do. All right, I'm going to give you just a tiny bit of one of Rita's tasks.
This is again from your novel that you read from
last
week.
This is again from my novel, yes, and from The Initiation of Ms. Holly, and this is one of her tasks. You, Ms. Holly? The delivery man asked. She found herself fighting the urge to lie, not sure what Vivian and the Mount would throw at her next. This is for you. He handed her a large oblong box, wrapped in brown paper, and eyed her curiously as she signed his electronic pad. No doubt he was wondering what the sex toys the pervy chick had ordered that had arrived in brown paper. He'd be shocked if he knew what the pervy chick actually got up to. She offered him a sweet smile and blush, and he blushed before turning quickly and disappearing down the hall. In the privacy of her lounge, she opened the box to discover a black leather cat suit, heavily weighted with zippers, snaps, chains, and other pieces of metal, which made Rita shiver to even contemplate. She was pretty sure the suit weighed as much as she did. The costume was complete with thigh-high boots, a bomber jacket, and a handwritten note that read, "Do not touch, do not fondle, and do not experiment. Just put on the suit and nothing else, then wait for me. Morgan." Visions of the High Councilman with the leopard tattoo flashed through her head. And through her cunt. Morgan needn't have worried about that she would experiment or play with the suit, and certainly not that she would try to put something on under it. There was barely room for skin under it. With the efforts of a contortionist and a fair amount of cursing out loud, she finally got it up over her hips and shoulders, but the thought of zipping it above her navel took her breath away and gave her a cold sweat. She didn't have to wait long before there was a soft knock on the door. A glance through the peephole assured her that it was Morgan. The intriguing tattoo was completely covered in black leather, all topped off with a heavy bomber jacket. Immediately, his brown sugar gaze took in her unzipped front of the suit and the way her arms were folded protectively across her breast. She blushed. "I'm sorry, but I'm claustrophobic." "Yes, I know. I know, kitten." She noticed the tiniest bit of Western twang. "Edward threatened me ad nauseam downstairs just now. That's what took me so long." Her heart suddenly leaped in her throat. "Edward's downstairs?" "Well, he was. I sent him home. I'm here now, love, and I promised to take good care of you." She tried to sound matter-of-fact. How long has he been down there?" "Ever since he got your text about someone spying on you." "Why didn't he come up?" He held her gaze, Sweet Cheeks, you know why he didn't come up. He changed the subject. Now let me show you about this lovely suit, and let me tell you why it's exactly the perfect suit for someone who suffers of your affliction. He struggled to drag her thoughts back from Edward. Morgan coaxed her arms away from her chest and released a long sigh at the sight of her breasts, barely covered by the unzipped front of the cat suit. Oh, we're going to have so much fun. He walked around behind her to take in the overall effect. Ever ridden a Harley? Motorcycle? No. Don't look so frightened, sweetness. I've been riding since I was a pup. His lips curled into an edible smile. I promise I'll make it good for you. He knelt in front of her and helped her into the boots, lingering to suckle her toes and kiss her instep before guiding her feet into the soft insides and slowly zipping them up and up and up. At last he stood and held the bomber jacket for her. Our steed awaits. Outside, a few neighborhood teenagers had gathered around to admire the biggest, sleekest vintage hog Rita had ever seen, complete with silver wings painted stylistically across the petrol tank. Could we just go now? She said, realizing that some of the boys' attention had shifted away from the bike. She felt suddenly like she felt in the dreams when she found herself in her office naked or in the grocery store queue. But Morgan took his time, buckling her into her helmet, making sure it wasn't too tight, making sure she wasn't claustrophobic. When she started to get on behind him, he shook his head, scooted back slightly, and patted the leather seat in front of him. She balked. Isn't that illegal? Not if we don't get caught. He patted the spot in front of him again and chuckled. Trust me, it's the best seat in the house. Trying to ignore the mutters and the stares of the teenagers, she climbed onto the Harley in front of him. Little less gracefully than she had planned, fortunately the resulting blush was contained within the helmet. Morgan knew only one speed, and that was suicidal. The G-force of acceleration forced her back against his chest with a yelp that fortunately was covered and drowned out by the hog. It seemed to her that Morgan was taking the fast way out of town, weaving in and out of traffic with such terrifying maneuvers that she feared heart failure was imminent. They had only gone a few blocks when she gave up shouting at him. Either he couldn't hear her or he was ignoring her. As the traffic lessened and he headed out the A3, she realized he was controlling the hog with one hand. The other arm was wrapped low around her waist. There was an electronic crackle inside her ear, next to her ear, and she heard his voice inside the helmet. They had contact. Just relax, sweetness. This is going to be so good. His hand slid down low on her belly until it rested against her pubic bone, where it began to fumble until she felt a tug and a zip, and suddenly cool air bathed the horizontal swatch of flesh exposed to the night. I love zippers, don't you? His voice was like a kiss against her earlobe.
Wow.
Is that enough?
That's... You could go on and on, don't you know?
Oh, I could go on and on, believe me, but we've only got limited time.
I love it. So, you know, some authors in this series have told me that they write for a female audience or write for a male audience, and depending on the audience, they tailor their presentation, their writing. Do you do that? Are you aware of a particular audience when you write, and do you tailor your presentation?
Most of the time, I figure I'm probably writing for a female audience because I sort of started out writing women writers writing for women.
Right.
But I sort of loosely keep that in mind. But I'm not a very girly person. I'm pretty much a tomboy actually, and I think that sort of makes my writing probably a little bit more enjoyable for men as well.
Right. Well, I sure like it.
Well, thank you.
And I'm a manly man, don't you know?
Oh, yes.
Do you have a writing ritual or routine? How do you get warmed up to write? Do you touch yourself impurely, perhaps? Because that's how I get warmed up for these interviews, don't you know?
Well, usually the touching myself impurely happens when I'm really inspired and the writing's really hot. It's sort of a product test thing. So.
I love it. So if you're not turned on, do you think your audience won't be turned on? Is that basically what you're saying?
I guess, yeah, that's kind of the litmus test.
Uh-huh.
If it doesn't turn me on, then for one thing, what's the point in writing it?
Right.
And you know, when I choose what stories, what calls for submission that I'll write for, I choose based on is this something that I find particularly arousing, or is this something that I think it doesn't interest me all that much. As far as my writing ritual, I usually walk the stories. I go for a long walk, and when I come back, the stories, you know, I work the story while I walk. And also, if I'm having trouble, I walk through the hard spots, and I come home, and it's fixed.
Wow.
And
I like
but,
that.
I don't write.
I like that. I like hearing that. It seems to me that, you know, just being outside, and instead of, you know, cloistered in, you know, an office or, you know, a room where you do your writing, that would free your mind up some. I mean, you find yourself in nature, and you find yourself in the bigger scheme of things, and maybe things iron themselves out.
I think that's true, and I think a lot of times, even if I'm not particularly thinking a story, it's almost like a reboot. You know, if I'm walking, my mind goes blank, and I'm involved in what's around me, and when I get home, it's like, okay, now I know what to write, and then I'm off and running. But I think it's the best, the most inspirational thing I know for my writing. And as far as routine goes, I don't write to a word count. I hate writing to a word count.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to write every day, say I'll do 1,000 words. I do whatever I do.
Yeah.
I write wherever I am as often as I can, and when I get tired, I stop.
Hmm.
That's sort of the ritual.
Yeah. So we just talked about the difference between erotica and romance. Another thing that I want to talk about is the distinction between erotica and pornography. In your opinion, is there a fundamental difference between the two forms of expression? And if so, where does the difference lie for you?
I personally have never heard anyone define the boundary between erotica and porn to my satisfaction.
Right.
I think the big difference is if you call something erotica, it's much more acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can have a wank to both or not. I mean, really.
It's true. It's true.
And if it turns you on, you will. If it doesn't, you won't. And it doesn't matter if it's porn or erotica. And it's the same thing as using it for, a tool that to use in your relationship with your partner.
Mm-hmm.
You can use it or you don't.
Yeah.
But there's no evidence that, you know, it's the porn will lead you down that slippery slope to evil, where the erotica won't. There's evidence coming out all the time to the contrary.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot more good erotica than there is good porn. But having said that, I've read crap erotica, and I've seen some pretty good porn. So
that's so true.
I just don't think there's much distinction. And I think the big hoopla about it is a bit ridiculous.
Has anyone accused you of writing pornographic material?
Not to my face, but if they did.
I love it. They would have you to contend with.
And if they did, they might be surprised to find that I don't consider that an insult.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah, because, I mean, if you don't find that insulting, then you just say, oh, thanks.
Yeah, exactly.
How cool. You just said something a moment ago that I want to pick up on, and you said something about that erotica can be, you know, beneficial to people, and that's where I want to go next. Has reading and writing erotica empowered you as a woman, or even enriched your sensual or sexual life?
Oh yeah, definitely. I had a writing teacher once who said that if you go to the place that disturbs you most, or that you're most comfortable with, from in your own experiences, and you write from that place, that the writing will be good, guaranteed. And not that sex disturbs me the most, but I think there are aspects of it that do, and I think it's intended to be that way.
Yes.
But I also think it's the place that disturbs the human psyche the most, because it's not the thing we can control.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that by going to that place, good things come from the writing, but good things come from being in a safe place where you can experiment sexually, if that makes any sense.
Oh, absolutely.
As far as the it being enriching to me, well, my husband says that basically I use him for I'm his research tool. Definitely there's some serious enriching going on.
So I suspect that you believe that other people could benefit from reading and or jotting down their sexual fantasies, right?
Oh, I think definitely. I mean, there are a lot of courses out there. You see them everywhere for women to go learn how to write erotica.
Yeah.
And I think, and in fact, I've been on a couple of those in the early days and when I was first starting to write erotica. And I think there's a real need for that outlet and for that to reconnect with our own sexuality.
And even if somebody's not interested in being published or, you know, it's just for the creative aspect of it. Again, the wedding that, you know, spirituality and sexuality stuff that we talked about last week about, you know, bringing ourselves together as a whole as opposed to, you know, our sex life is over here in our bedroom and, you know, this is what we do, you know, under the covers in the dark and then the rest of my life is over here, is bringing all of that kind of stuff together. And how better to do that than to jot down one's sexual thoughts and fantasies?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I've always told people, you should write. It doesn't matter if you want to be published. It doesn't matter what you write. It matters that you have an outlet. And I think that's never more true than it is about sexuality.
Right. Are there topics that you gravitate toward and topics that you avoid?
Like I said, I love to twist the cliche. Uh-huh. I always enjoy that. And I pretty much find that I can write just about most kink, about anything. I mean, even, you know, vanilla, straight, I can write just about anything. Mm-hmm. But some things that I'm less comfortable with, I go in as a voyeur because maybe what I find in it is not necessarily erotic in the act itself, but when people are aroused, that's arousing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's seeing the people in the state of arousal then arouses me to where I can write about it and make it arousing.
Fascinating. Absolutely. So themes that are expressed in your work don't necessarily reflect your lifestyle. And then you get into character how, so to speak?
By using my imagination. remember that vegetable garden I was talking about?
I love it. You are
actually
something.
It is another situation where wherever I am, if I'm thinking, all right, well, what if this person did this and this and this, and how could I make that into a story? And obviously it's not something that I've ever done because believe me, there's a lot of stuff out there. When I begin to weave the bits together as a story and I find that kernel that I find arousing, then I can work from there. And so most of it, you know, my life's probably considered relatively boring, but my inner life is really amazing.
I love it. So today, erotic artists abound, and there are an abundance of amazingly good sex writing out there, including some exceptional erotica. Although in some circles, this genre still hasn't been accepted as mainstream, and we touched on this a bit before. Have you ever been on the receiving end of criticism for the work that you do? Has your writing been denigrated by other authors, perhaps, because of its content? Like, she's so talented, but she really needs to get her mind out of the gutter kind of thing?
I haven't, if that's happened, I haven't noticed, and it could be that I'm just oblivious, but I do occasionally get the idea that some people wonder if I'm ever going to stop being nasty and grow up and actually be a real writer, but I hope they're not holding their breath.
Well, that's an interesting thing because, you know, some people I've talked to have said the very same thing, that, you know, when you mature out of this, you know, adolescent, you know, phase... and you know, grow up, then, you know, and then you might be a really good writer. I find that so denigrating and so disappointing. And, you know, when we mature out of our, you know, sexual fantasies, then, you know, we become fully human. And I think that's the direct opposite of what happens when one becomes fully human.
I think that's absolutely true. Absolutely.
Thank you. What do you look for in the work of the erotic art or written erotica of others?
I think one of the things that I look for is a sense of playfulness.
Cool.
There's a certain, I don't know, if I read something and I feel that clench below my navel, that in-body experience, then mm-hmm. that works for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that needs to be a physicality and a way of connecting with the story on a visceral level, mm-hmm. I think. That's what I look for.
Mm, interesting. Who are your inspirations and your sexual heroes, if you have any?
Well, my inspiration, one of the big ones, is KJB. I think she's a classic example of still waters running deep.
Oh.
And kinky.
Deep and kinky.
But she's so deliciously prolific, and uh-huh. she still lives such a busy life
yeah.
in the real world,
yeah.
and I'm just bowled over by how well she does it all.
Yeah.
I love her writing.
I'm a big fan. She's such a sweetheart. Doll baby on top of it, and you know
she is.
She was the very first person in this series, and you know everything that has come after can be traced directly back to her. So it's she's a wonder, and yeah,
I think that bodes well for the series beginning with her because she's just.
I agree.
She's amazing.
I totally agree. I absolutely agree.
There are so many people who I'm sort of still discovering because the field of writers, you know, is growing. But I love Justine Elliott and Charlotte Stein, Jeremy Edwards. You know,
Jeremy.
Discovering new writers. He's fantastic, isn't he?
Yeah.
Those are basically, you know, I'm very inspired by them,
mm-hmm.
all of them.
Sexual heroes? Any?
Sexual heroes. Well, of course, I've got the usual, you know, Betty Dodson, Zoe Margolis, and Violet Blue, but I have to say, at the moment, my real sexual heroes at the moment are the women who work. There are two sex shops, and well, they're not sex shops. They're women's erotic emporium is what they're called, and they are the most amazing places on the planet. And the women who work there are. They've created a safe haven for women to work to come, you know, it's to buy sex toys
right.
and books and cool
right.
stuff, but also just to stop in for a cuppa and talk.
Right.
And they're
good
dealing
for them.
With,
absolutely.
You know, neighbors and people of the typical religious people who think, oh, sex, well, that's awful, and they're doing an amazing work in sometimes a very difficult situation.
Yes.
And I picked their brains relentlessly
yeah.
when I was researching Holly, and I just love them all to bits.
Right. And you've done readings there, right?
Yes, I have. And bless their hearts, they're just amazing, all of them. I don't know where they find so many amazing women to work at this place, but they definitely are sexual heroes.
They
definitely.
Are, and, you know, on the cutting edge. I mean, right there, you know, where the
absolutely,
rubber meets the
absolutely.
Road. And good for them, and good for us that there are such courageous women out there. And you can tell them that Dr. Dick says the same thing. So do you have do you have any advice for a novice writer of erotica?
In media res, that's the biggie. Because editors only have a limited amount of time, very limited, and your readers will too. So if you start with this big, long setup, you're going to lose people before you get to the good bits, and that would be really tragic.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big thing that I would tell people, because I think that people read erotica for the erotic parts.
Uh-huh.
And it's so much easier when you don't have to skip over to the good bits, don't you think?
I'll say. So finally, before we can conclude, can you give us your website address and walk us around a bit? And we can buy your work on your site, yes? Or at least
yes,
through it?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah. It's kdgrace.blogspot.com.
Cool.
/ And you can buy the work on Amazon or Excite Books. They sell in Canada and the U.S. and Australia and New Zealand. So,
good.
And I'm not sure the local shops in the States. Ann Summers stores sell them here. The Shush Erotic Emporiums in London sell them.
Uh-huh.
They're available all over now. So I'm very excited.
Yes. Right. Well, my dear, it's been such a joy. And as I said at the beginning of this week, you helped break open a conversation that I've been wanting to have with people for a very long time, and I deeply appreciate that. I appreciate your honesty and your forthrightness and your vulnerability, because, you know, it's not easy to talk about what we talked about, and I'm the richer for the experiences. So are the people in our audience. So thank you very much, and we will be visiting you in cyberspace until we talk again.
I look forward to it. Thanks so much for having me.
Be well. Give my best to Kay, and we'll be chatting soon again. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Hey, what a great show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week at this time for more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library.
My first husband, he's very handsome, but too crazy. It seemed like all we did was fight and make love, fight and make love, fight and make love. One time, I'm not kidding you, we fell out the window together.
You don't say. Well, listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your own home. With just a little prompting from you, they're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out. You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the banner in the sidebar that reads, Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. There is no membership fee, and this is a pay-per-minute kind of deal. Remember that your pay-per-view minutes allow you to watch whatever content you want for whatever length of time you choose. Pretty gall darn sweet, huh?
Hey, I give you $50 not to do this.
It's almost over, but I'll take the $50 anyhow. Listen, I have one last thought. I hope you're also following my two other interview series, which appear on Wednesdays. One is called Sex Education, and I converse with prominent practitioners, educators, and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles, and we investigate the world of fetish sex and kink. And the other is called Sex Wisdom. Here, I chat with researchers, educators, clinicians, pundits, and philosophers who are making news and reshaping how we look at our sexual selves. I can assure you that these conversations will be well worth the time you spend with us. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.